Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
This is New Retirement Radio with the team from Prout Financial Design.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
WTCM News Talk 580, time now for New Retirement Radio. Dennis Prout is here with Prout Financial Design, and the team is in. Good morning, sir.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you, Ron, on December 12th, 2019. Today, we are joined by Heidi Thompson.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to have you. You are Managing Executive and Financial Advisor there at Prout Financial Design. Mm-hmm. She joins us now every Thursday, and Shea will be on here later with some Shea stats. But in the interim, we have John Sluice here, CPA.
Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, John. Talking about what we need to be thinking about for year end. All of a sudden, 2 weeks or so away,
tax issues coming up at the end of the year and getting ready for next year. So.
Yes, along with the presents around the tree.
Ah, yes.
Come income tax. The tax man cometh, indeed.
They come every year.
Yes, they do. So we're going to find out what we can do about it. Now, before year end, what are the specific things that you can be thinking about or you should be thinking about and possible deductions that you may want to take before year end? Some end of year tax planning. And then next, for middle income individuals, general information for them, and then upper individuals in incomes above $125,000. I just chose an arbitrary amount. It's not necessarily considered upper income from any classical perspective, but it's an arbitrary choice I made in terms of, you know, hey, we need to peg it somewhere, so we'll get started there. So thank you, John, for joining us. You are with InTrust CPAs. You are a CPA. You are the president of the firm here in Traverse City, correct?
That is correct.
Excellent. And your phone number, if you would, for those who have questions of you individually, is?
Our phone number is 231-935-1590.
231-935-1590.
And we should mention that they have a brand new offices. They had an awesome open house last week, and Shay and I were over there, and it looks great, and it's exciting to see your new place. I really like it.
Well, thank you. It's been a great opportunity, an exciting opportunity for us to go through that process. It was it's now off of Woodmere, just south of the library there, and it was an old industrial warehouse. Used to be the AT&T CenturyTel building, and it was, I say it's kind of the accountant's dream because it's a 72 by 60 square building, and so it's about as efficient as you possibly can get. But it was very warehouse and industrial, so taking that and making it into be some offices and has been a fun experience for us to be able to make it our own and help our clients so that we can be more efficient and get the staff to be more efficient as well. So
good for you. So year-end tax planning, before year-end, what are some of the general things people want to know and what can they possibly take advantage of before year-end here, John?
Well, I think right now is when you've got to be really thinking about things. I mean, the sooner the better. People always assume, you know, accountants are the busiest during, you know, comes February through April. But I actually tell people this is actually the busy time because this is where when you do things, it makes a difference. Come February to April, it's done. There's very little we can do then. So now is when you want to be doing it. So
call your tax planning right now.
One that will spread across multiple of those categories that you had mentioned there, Dennis, were any item that you have to do through your wage. So if you're an employee, that if you want to ask your employer to do something, or if you're a business owner and you need to do it through as a payroll, getting payroll in and things done through payroll before the end of the year is critical because you can't go back and adjust those items. So
you're talking about contributions to retirement accounts?
Yeah, so contribution to a 401k through your employer, adjusting your withholding. So last year, if you recall, the IRS adjusted the withholding tables as an employee, and a lot of people got caught off guard because they may have owed more during at the end of the year because
That's
they got
right.
it during the year. Well, to adjust your withholding, you have to do through payroll. Last year, because so many people got caught off guard, they adjusted the penalty percentage. So that way, if you were only 85% withheld, you were okay. My guess, and we don't know for sure, they haven't announced, but my guess is that the IRS is not going to come out and give that relief again this year. So making sure that you have the same amount of tax that you had withheld last year, you're going to want to have it withheld this year or make adjustments. And so you're going to want to do that before the year end.
So just when you thought it was safe to go outside, it's really may not be.
It may not be, no.
Yeah.
No. Okay, and that last paycheck where you need the money for the Christmas, you may have to go into the withholding if you're.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. Something to do before year end also, if you've got kids in college, to watch for the tuition credit. So when you pay tuition, you may qualify for a credit. And whether in the tuition, the education may be occurring in 2020, but you might want to make the payment in 2019 because that's based on when it's paid. Again, that something to talk to your advisor on to find out if it's you've already capped that, but that's something to think about that has to be happen in a particular calendar year.
How much is the credit for 19?
It can be as much as $2,500. It depends on what if you've claimed it in the past or how much of the tuition and what's qualified. But
and is that a credit against the tax?
Correct. That a credit versus a deduction.
The magic term in tax planning land is the credit. It's worth 3 to 5 times as much as a deduction, depending on your tax bracket. So credits against your tax, extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
This one's less of having it not necessarily have to happen before year end, but one of the biggest surprises that we see through individuals is the premium tax credit. So that's the credit that if you applied for health insurance over the healthcare.gov and they gave you a subsidy, that subsidy is really an advance on tax credits. Well, so if your income changes from what you tell them. So if you think last December you told the IRS, I think I'm going to make, let's say, $50,000. Well, maybe this year you made $70,000 because your bonus pushed you over from $50,000 to $70,000, hypothetically. And the threshold for that premium tax credit, it's a cliff. And when I say cliff, meaning is you $1 changes that percentage. So
wow.
If you're married, let's say with two, with no kids, maybe it's $68,000. If you make $68,000 in $1, you have to give all of that credit back. Now I made that number specifically up because it changes by number of kids and household, but
right.
That it is a cliff to where you might have to pay that back. And I watched someone yesterday. We did tax planning for them, and they would have had to give back $15,400 of a subsidy that they got just because they made an extra $2,000. And then so we were able to do tax planning to push into retirement accounts to bring them back down to where they're below that threshold. So watch that premium tax credit.
Oh, my gosh. That's where deductions for retirement contributions can wind up being gold because it affects other areas of tax.
So isn't
it interesting, too, to note that the tax planning – is a huge part of financial planning. The savings that can occur if you have a good accountant, I'm just going to, that is incredible how amazingly valuable this can be in terms of real dollars. We're all playing this tax game. We get it, right? But how valuable that is can really, really be brought home in terms of real dollars back to you for your own use.
Well, and the perfect example of that would be, so I met with a business owner a couple of weeks ago, and they were projecting on this premium tax credit. He had projected lower income, had a very good year, higher than what they were expecting, and they were going to have to pay back, it was about $16,000 of premium tax credit. They historically had maximized their traditional IRA, so every year they planned on putting in the $6,500. They are feeling pretty good. But all of a sudden, by having that extra income, they were going to have to pay another $16,000 in taxes. we were able to push them into a different type of retirement account, individual 401k. That has to be set up before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. By doing that, that $16,000, instead of going to the government, went right into the retirement account and pushed it out. So they were able to save that, avoid paying the government $16,000, and it went to their own retirement account.
Fantastic. And the individual, you're talking about the individual 401k or the a solo 401k?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Right.
Well, so, I had a question on
yes,
that.
Yes, sorry, Heidi. Go
individual ahead. 401k. I was just wondering, I was talking to John before the show, and as a small business owner, the different kind of plans that you can choose from, two of those are the SEP IRA or the individual 401k. And so which one is better? What are some of the things you talk to your clients about when they're trying to decide which one they're going to use?
And Heidi, I'm going to add one more to the mix, which is a simple IRA
as
well as a business owner. So with a simple SEP and the individual 401k.
That's right.
I tend to really like simple IRAs. We'll use those because they're simple. They're low cost. They're simple. It keeps the administrative costs way down. So we like those, especially if you have other employees. But now if you're an individual, that's working, so you have a Schedule C and you're self-employed, that's where you have the SEP, or you can have the individual 401k. So why a SEP? SEPs have been around for a very long time. They're tried and true. Everyone knows them, and financial advisors know them. Individual 401ks, in the grand scheme of things, are fairly new. 401ks can get complicated. A traditional 401k can be very complicated. The benefit of them is they're not simple. So if you want to say that we can contribute based on the first 2% of your compensation, and then after that it flips to 0.5%, and then it goes to 0.25%, you can do that as long as you set that up. So you can be very custom. You can do that as well with an individual 401k, so you can get more that you can do with it. The biggest advantage, though, for an individual 401k over a SEP is you can put more dollars in than you can with a SEP, especially if you're an S corporation. So the type of entity that you have as an individual makes a difference as to what you may want to put in.
So the simple is very simple because there aren't any administrative fees, basically, with a simple IRA. The maximum contribution, though, for 2019 is $16,000. Right. But in a solo 401k, maximum contribution is $56,000
That is
plus
correct.
Another $6,000 catch-up if you happen to be over 50.
Yeah.
So for those who've experienced significant success, I was as you were mentioning this, John, I was thinking the average middle class those who are in the middle class, middle income areas now, have had an increase in income this year of $5,000. So for individual businesses and that sort of thing, if you've had a really good year, my gosh, you really may want to take a look at what things do I need to do before the year end so I don't get totally caught by surprise when tax
right.
season
and,
comes.
And to be realistic, if I look at those numbers, the average business owner, to say that we're going to save every year $60,000 or $53,000 is generally not likely. And so that's where I will oftentimes default to the simple, because at the $16,500, that's plenty.
That's a good sum.
That's a good sum that we're putting in. And it's simple, it's low cost. But as you're in the later years of your business, you've got it established and you can really start seeing that extra profit there, using that individual 401k may really make sense.
Let's say you qualify for the senior discount at McDonald's, you know. Ron's looking around. You may be at the point where your business has gotten to the level where you can say, oh my gosh, I need to make some more contributions.
Correct.
To put a fine point to
correct.
It. Correct. Right?
Another advantage of individual 401k over a SEP. A SEP is limited to only one method of tax treatment, which is it's tax-free today, but when you pull it out, it's taxable.
Correct.
With an individual 401k, you can choose, and you can have both traditional or a Roth within it. And so you may have a fantastic year this year, and the tax guy says, okay, yep, we're going to use the traditional side of it. And next year, you have a lower year. Well, let's use the next year, we'll use the Roth side of things where we can take advantage of having that lower rate.
That's a huge point, because you're not in the traditional income limitations for Roth contributions. If your income is over in the $200,000 range, married filing jointly, then you can take advantage of a Roth IRA. But if you happen to have a solo 401k, or for those who are in a regular 401k plan, The income limitations do not apply for making those contributions within your 401k to the Roth side. And the other huge part of that is if you're making contributions on a monthly basis, you're dollar cost averaging into the stock market, which, you know, everyone's looking around their over their shoulder, if you will, at when are we going to have the next recession or correction. That can be a great reason or a great way to satisfy some of that risk that might be involved in the investing in the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Hey, to clarify, so all this started with the premium tax credit related to the exchanges, the ACA. How is that set up then? When you sign up, you kind of predict what you think
you're
you'll make
predicting
the next year?
What you're going to make. So you're going to say, based on what I think, I'm going to make $43,000. And then they say, based on that, here's your tax credit that you're going to get. And if you have make more than that, you give some back. If you make less than that, they give you more. So you're basically doing your tax return in the November and December of the year before as an individual. So that's where I've seen more surprises come off of that than anything else, and especially since it's a cliff.
So estimating low doesn't really...
So estimating low could cause surprises. There is... To answer your question... that tax planning now is not just about income tax avoidance. It's also about health insurance costs and playing on the exchange, because there could be reasons that you may want to estimate low because there's two forms of subsidies. There is the premium tax credit, but there's also lower deductions and lower deductibles. And you may want to estimate low if you have a basis, and then just know that you might have a big tax liability and plan for that. But that's part of planning, so you have to know that. I'll also throw in there right now, too, that there's on the idea of more than just income tax planning. We oftentimes you'll hear us talk about, $150,000 and above or higher income. Tax planning is not just for a few select individuals. Retirees, there's Medicare planning and there's also Social Security planning of what might be taxable or might not be. And so we may have individuals that will come in and say, well, last year I got hit because I got an extra capital gain and all of a sudden my premium on my Medicare went way up. How do I avoid that? So there is tax planning that can come along with just Medicare planning, too.
And that is a two-year look back on the income for Medicare premium increases. And those increases can wind up being three times to four times what you would normally pay for a Medicare premium.
And for someone on a fixed income, that makes a big difference.
Oh, does it ever. Let's take a break. So we're with John Sluice, and we were just talking about the break, the QCD reporting. Now, what we do for all of our clients is we send them a letter in regard to the QCD, tell them how much they've done, and there's a big red flag on the top right of that letter telling that they must report this to their tax advisor. And you were just talking about this, the importance of making certain that they do that.
Because that doesn't get reported to the IRS. And so as a tax advisor, when we get the information from the retirement companies and the advisories that we don't know that that qualified charitable distribution had actually occurred, and it's very potential that that gets taxed. And so you went through all these steps to make sure you made the proper qualified distribution, and then it ends up being taxed. And so no fault to the tax advisor, no fault to yours. The point there is if you do that, make sure you tell your tax advisor, because they're not getting the information unless you're giving it to them.
So the 1099 doesn't have any special indication or indicator on that showing the tax consultant or advisor that indeed that was a QCD or qualified charitable distribution.
Correct. Or the at-home tax preparer, either one. Yeah. So if you get a 1099 from, say, Fidelity or from any one of those, they're just going to be on there and they're going to be – it could show taxable of the 20,000 or whatever the number is, and it includes that qualified charitable distribution. So you got to be careful for it.
Huge. That's really important. All right. So next, are we ready to move on to middle –
income. Well, one other last item I'd say, and this applies to both medical and high, would be so custody considerations. And so when I say that, meaning dependents, who gets to deduct them? And that plays into a lot of the credits that are out there for any family that could be going through custody type situations. Earned income credit, tuition credits, premium tax credits, all of those. The IRS does not necessarily follow what your custody agreement could say. And so getting the proper releases and getting that started sooner than later is important, because there are many situations where it could be that neither party would qualify for the deduction if you don't do it properly or for the credit. So
the parent who has custody doesn't necessarily get to take all the deductions or receive all the credits tax-wise.
Yeah, so where it comes into is on certain credits, it gets to whoever has the custody, more than 50%. Unless that parent has given up rights for that dependent. So say in a custody agreement, they say every odd year, my ex-spouse gets the deduction. Well, if your child in that particular case lived with spouse A, but spouse A gave up the deduction in a custody agreement, spouse B is the one that's supposed to get the credit because the custody agreement says that. But if the child didn't live with spouse B, they don't get the credit either. And then so neither spouse A or spouse B end up with the credit. So unless you go through the right paperwork to attach to the right tax, to the tax return to show, yes, I'm agreeing to this. Oh. So the key there is just because the custody agreement says something doesn't mean that it's going to follow that.
Okay. Important. Yep. You bet.
So kind of shifting a little bit into then the watching for some of the higher income, some of the tax planning as it relates to in some of the financial investments that are there. It gets into the idea that says a lot of the times tax planning we spend on pushing expenses in and lowering income down. That's what we all assume. That's not always the case. Right now, the general feeling is in that we're in a fairly low tax regime and that now might be the time to take advantage of some of these things.
Now, the brackets today are so incredibly wide to me. The 12% tax bracket federally goes all the way to taxable income for a joint couple filing joint in 19, almost to $79,000.
Yeah, so, for capital, yeah.
Yeah, and so for 2020, it's over $80,000. That is a big tax bracket, 12%. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go ahead, John.
And then specifically as it relates to investments, there is a potential for a 0% tax bracket for capital gains up to $78,000. So a lot of times when we're looking at doing some tax planning at the end of the year, we're saying, okay, what losses do we want to harbor? What do we want to sell? Well, the flip side of it could be that we may want to look at what are some gains that we can recognize, that we can recognize them at the 0% rate.
Wow, that would be helpful.
Yes, because then you get that step up in basis potential. You got to watch. You have to watch wash sales that come with that. But at the same time, recognizing and paying taxes at the 0% rate is something as an accountant I shiver over.
For a client, that makes you really excited. Yes. I can tell. So the actually, I was just thinking of NUA, net unrealized appreciation, for a client who happens to have a rollover, and they've got a capital gain. Let's say they on that stock that they had distributed from their account. They may want to take a gain on a portion of that individual stock that they received from that qualified plan as well.
Correct.
Huge benefits tax-wise. I mean, it just makes your head spin, doesn't it, Ron?
It does.
I can just tell. Yes. It's exciting. It's great stuff. So there are significant benefits, dollar benefits, for those people who are getting good advice.
Yep. As you're doing that, you do have to watch what's called the net investment tax, so otherwise known as the Medicare tax that are coming through. And so if you have an individual that's made more than $250,000, so that's a married filing jointly, is the $250,000 threshold there.
Taxable income. Right.
Any investment earnings that you make are subject to an additional 3.8% tax. So doing tax planning to maybe potentially get below that threshold of the $250,000 or $200,000 is consideration. There's also that could come along with that of saying, okay, well, watching what particular year you're doing those to make sure it's more even. We'll see that potentially hit when you may sell a second home or you may sell part of your business or something. So how does that play in? So really watching that net investment tax is important.
So in essence, you're talking about the Medicare surtax.
Correct.
Which can wind up costing, in essence, someone having a federal tax rate of over 40% on some of that income. Very expensive indeed.
Yes, it does get very expensive, yes.
So net, what is that called again? Net.
It's net investment tax.
Net investment tax. So you're going to want to take a close look at what any capital gains that have occurred but also your overall tax to make certain you're not subject to that, the net investment tax.
Yeah, and where I see that affecting most individuals is when we're doing what I call the napkin calculation. So you're going to sell a piece of property that you've held for a long time, and in the back of the napkin you're calculating, okay, in order to sell this, here's the net number that I want to get. And you assume 15% capital gains. Well, it may not be 15% because depending, that may push you to that net investment tax. So all of a sudden, instead of being 15%, it's 18.8%. And so just make sure you account for that.
So is that one of those situations where it's great, you made money. The bad news is you made money and you owe more tax.
Yes, correct. But there are, but that would be a year that, okay, we're selling the extra investment property that we've had. Well, you know what? Let's back off on some of our capital gains and recognize some losses that particular year instead of recognizing the gains. And so making sure that it's done not inside of a bubble, but inside of a consideration of everything that's going on.
Try to get the best strategy possible to come out with the best outcome.
Yeah, and to get to your point, Heidi, that, you know, I always say that I never want to pay a dime more taxes than we need to, but I enjoy paying taxes because it means that you made money. I just like paying taxes at the 0% rate or the 10% of the rate. So having it be consistent. So what I hate as a tax preparer is when you have 1 year at zero, the next year 37, then at zero, because if you're doing zero, it means you're giving up deductions and credits that might be available.
Right.
And so being able to just levelize that across the board so it's even year over year.
That's a good point. Yep.
Amazon seems to have figured that game out.
Yes. Yeah.
The 0%.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Ouch. So, John, tax deductions for business. The business out there who, business owners who want to take advantage of their businesses as well as to understand what options they may have.
So now is the time that you hear, and I'll have many individuals sit across the table from me, and they're kind of looking at their spouses, business owners, and they say, so do I get to buy my truck, or do I get to buy my my excavator this year, or do I get to buy this piece of equipment, and smiling, and they're looking for the okay. And I would say in general this year businesses are up from a tax point of view, and so there is going to be a fair amount of that year-end buying. Now is the time to do that if you're going to be doing to consider purchasing equipment that you may need. New supplies, items like that.
Are you going to get a new excavator, Dennis?
Well, yeah, but it's from the Farm and Fleet store. It's a little
Tonka
thing I pull off the shelf. Exactly.
I was hoping you were going to say Shea gets a company car.
No. Okay.
Those are capital items, which it you're able to potentially expense right away, which is it's called accelerated appreciation. That's important. Another thing to consider as a business owner is items on a credit purchase on a credit card are treated as cash payments. So you may think, okay, I don't have the cash right now to go buy some of these extra items. If they're really needed, I'm not one that's going to push using a credit card more than you need to. But as a business, if you have a credit card that's in place, you could purchase it on a credit card. And even though you haven't paid that credit card bill yet, it's deemed as being counted for in this particular year.
So think about those things that you can expense right now to take advantage of any tax breaks you might receive.
Correct. And that's where I'll always start all of this tax planning with the idea that says, do you need it? Don't just go buy it because the tax guy says to do it. Because if you spend a dollar to save 15 cents, you still lost 85 cents if you don't need it. And that's where the planning comes in, so retirement savings. So then you're spending but putting into your own savings account. But when you do those in conjunction for things that you also are going to need anyway, that's where it really makes sense.
Great.
The flip side of that, though, is we're spending a fair amount of time right now looking at what not to spend. And so maybe that we don't need to purchase it this year, but we might want to purchase it in future years. And that comes in because of the QBID, or Qualified Business Income Deduction. The more profitable you are, the more your deduction is that comes through. So it's a deduction on your profits of the business. And so you may choose to say, well, you know what? I had a lower year this year. I might want to push it into next year. And so that way you're leveling off that QBID or the purchases that you have in place that are going to artificially decrease that deduction down. So we've got to be careful about that too. So.
All right. Is there a phone call?
There is. Shall we take a quick call?
Oh, you bet. Let's do that. Thanks, Ron.
Let's go to Williamsburg, Michigan, and Joe is on the line. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. Hey, my question is, as long as you're talking about businesses, if a business is for sale and you are getting ready to sell it, and you are also getting ready to retire, is that amount that you sell your business going to affect your Social Security and Medicare?
So the short answer is yes. So what you're talking about is a business sale. That should have a lot of tax planning that comes along with that. And so I said the short answer is yes, because it depends on when you receive cash. So with a business sale, it may come in stages. You may get a seller finance note. It may come in different years. But it does impact your Social Security and Medicare, because income that could be coming through depends on the nature of how you're getting paid for. So if you're getting paid for interest on a seller note, won't affect it. But if you're getting earned income that comes off of, say, a bonus or a non-compete agreement, could impact it. So it undoubtedly will, to some extent, it impact that.
Yeah, so part of it is your age as well, how old you are, and it's an impact on your Social Security benefits.
Yeah, and so especially if you haven't reached your full retirement mm-hmm. age, that plays into it as well.
So you should wait until after the sale of your business to start collecting? Does that make sense?
Well, it depends on what type of income it is that you're going to be getting from the sale of the business, how it's qualified in terms of what is it, okay?
And where we're playing into that, what we're talking about, is oftentimes in today's business environment, businesses are sold by what's called an asset sale versus a stock sale. And so with an asset sale, you could have recapture. There's lots of tax implications that shift it to different natures of income. So it's not just all one type of income. And mm-hmm. how that plays into it will play into whether it's taxable for Social Security, Medicare, and net investment tax, and all of those tax factors.
Yes.
That also brings up a point here I'm just going to mention very quickly, in that we oftentimes assume that we want to transfer gifting to next generations or other items. When it comes to selling businesses, if we're selling businesses to a next generation, you can potentially do some strategies on generational shifting and using higher income brackets from the older generation to lower income brackets in the younger generation. So when you are looking at divesting your business, it's usually one of your largest assets in your portfolio. That specifically, take time to think about how you can do that and how you can tax plan over multiple years.
So don't just talk to your attorney about getting the business transitioned, if you will. Talk to your tax planning accountant as well to make certain, because the accountant's going to bring up a whole variety of other subjects and issues, obviously, as a part of this conversation, mm-hmm. for you as the owner and or your family to take advantage of.
Yep, and like you even mentioned, it's more than just income tax. It's the premium tax credit. It's the Medicare considerations. It's the Social Security considerations. There's several different considerations.
There are a lot of moving parts to this thing. So guess what? It was simplification. At some decade ago, simplification went out the door but a long time ago, and it's only gotten more complex.
We have a tax return from 1949 hanging up on the wall in our office. And it's one page. There's about seven boxes. Now, with that said, I would tell you that I think it's at $49,000, you're at the highest tax bracket of 90%. So whether you want simplification is another matter.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.